evening, everybody. Welcome to this evening's Later Tate. My name is Madeline Keep, and I'm curator of adult programmes here at the gallery. It gives me great pleasure to welcome you to this evening that's exploring the displays, which gave us the fantastic opportunity to look at Thin Black Lines. A little bit of housekeeping before we begin. If you have got a mobile phone on you, if you wouldn't mind just putting that on silent or turning that off, because we all are recording tonight's talk for our Tate channel. And we will have a bit of time for questions towards the end, so when we do get to that bit, so if you could wait for the microphone, that would be great. So we begin. In the early 1980s, artist Labaina Himid curated three exhibitions of young black and Asian women artists who challenged their collective invisibility in the British art world, engaging with contemporary social, cultural, political and aesthetic issues. Labaina Himid, Professor of Contemporary Art at the University of Central Lancashire and Paul Goodwin, Independent Curator, devised Tate Britain's Thin Black Lines display, taking the name from the 1985 Institute of Contemporary Art exhibition curated by Himid. Tonight we hear the curators in conversation with artist Claudette Johnson about the display, its legacy, and the relevance for contemporary British culture today. I'd now like to just further introduce our three speakers. Labaina is an artist and curator. She has an MBE for services to black women's art and makes satirical and political paintings as part of an ongoing 35-year project to communicate with diverse audiences in museums and galleries internationally. She's currently producing a publication for Thin Black Lines, ready in 2012, and is making new work for the exhibition Cotton at the Whitworth Gallery, Manchester, which will open in February. Claudette Johnson is an artist and member of the Pan-African Connection, later Black Art Group, which she joined whilst a BA Honours Fine Arts student in Wolverhampton. She's currently co-organising the Black Art Group project with former members of the group, and her work is held in the collections of the Arts Council and the Manchester Art Gallery. She is currently showing in the BLK Art Group show at Graves Gallery in Sheffield. Tonight's discussion is chaired by Paul Goodwin. Paul Goodwin is a theorist, curator and urban researcher. He's Associate Research Fellow at the Centre for Urban and Community Research, Goldsmiths College, and was curator of cross-cultural programmes here in 2007 until 2010, which I had the great pleasure of working with him. He is currently working in the curatorial department at Tate Britain on the migrations display, exhibition, I should say, which is opening on the 31st of January, so I hope that you will all be able to make it for the exhibition. And he co-edited Under Construction, an interdisciplinary study of the relationship between shanty towns and the central city in Lisbon, Portugal, and was curator of the Under Construction exhibition in Lisbon in May 2009. I would like to also add that Paul was consultant curator for Afro-Modern Journeys through Black Atlantic at Tate Liverpool in 2010, which I know some of you will have seen. So please do join me in welcoming Labaina, Claudette and Paul.
And thank you, Madeline, for that introduction and also for inviting us to come and talk a bit about the display, Thin Black Lines. Has everyone seen the display? Okay. If you haven't seen it yet, definitely it would be a good idea tonight to go and have a look afterwards. And there may be, there's a suggestion that we may continue the conversation upstairs after this for people who want to have a more in-depth discussion. I would just like to say, to start off with, we're going to have a kind of a conversation between the three of us where I will kind of ask some questions, but it will be a three-way discussion. And then we'd like to kind of open it up to questions that you may have about us. And it's just great to see so many people that I know. Most of the people here are either my family or my friends. So I've really kind of got the fam down, to support it. So that's great. So let me just quickly explain, before we talk about the display and some of the works, about how it was conceived. In 2010, when I was working here at Tate Britain, I was asked to come up with some ideas for a new series of displays called In Focus displays at Tate Britain. So displays basically at Tate Britain are basically drawn from the collection. Okay, and exhibitions tend to be mostly about loans, although this display is an exception because there's only one work actually in the Tate collection in this display, and we'll talk a bit about that in a minute. So I really was interested in doing something around the 1980s because the 1980s is a really key period around where black artists were very active in shaping the discourse around art in Britain, and I felt that it hadn't really been reflected enough in the displays at Tate. And eventually I decided that I really wanted to do something around black women in particular, because I don't think there has actually been a display in a major museum in Britain specifically related to black and Asian women in Britain, okay? So this is from my knowledge, is the first such display. And I was very determined to do this. And then I was involved in an exhibition at Tate Liverpool called Afro-Modern, which is about, based on Paul Gilroy's idea of the Black Atlantic. And it was really a kind of international exhibition with about, 60 artists from all over the kind of African diaspora, looking at kind of ideas around the African diaspora and modernism. And we had a dinner afterwards, and at the dinner I happened to be sitting next to Lubaina Himid, who is here, who was central to many of the exhibitions around black women's art in the 1980s, and we'd never met before. And I had this idea in my head, and I kind of talked to Lubaina and said, listen, Lubaina, I want to do this thing at Tate Britain. And we had this really very interesting conversation, which I think kind of continued, and we continued to talk about it. And we had lots of discussions and visits, and eventually we kind of got it into the program here. And the result is the display that you see here. So that's kind of a little bit about how it came about. Let me just quickly, before
I... That's a censored version. That's the clean version.
But what we kind of had lots of discussions about how we would approach this, because it's a big topic and lots of things to talk about. But we kind of settled on the idea of taking as a starting point three key exhibitions that Lubaina curated and organized in the 1980s, okay? Which was there was one called Three Black Women at the Africa Center.
Five
Black Women. At the Africa Center in 1983, at the Africa Center. Everyone remember the Africa Center? You know, Jazzy B, all those guys, right? So there's also art happening there as well, okay? And Lubaina had a very important exhibition, which was really one of the first exhibitions.
Of only women
In that thing. Then in the following year, there was a big festival of black women's creativity, if I remember, at the Battersea Art Center, and there was an exhibition called Black Women Time Now, which Lubaina organized, is featuring a number of artists. And then in 1985, there was a bigger exhibition of 11 black women artists, the biggest exhibition to date, called The Thin Black Line, at the Institute for Contemporary Arts, the ICA, which is one of the primary, most important venues for contemporary art in Britain. And that was quite a significant exhibition and included the work of Claudette and other black artists, who we'll talk about in a minute. So we wanted to really, for this display at Tate Britain, we wanted to revisit that moment in the early 80s when these exhibitions came about, when black women were organizing for themselves, because it was a kind of very much a self-effort, right? People were organizing themselves. Lubaina is an artist, okay, first and foremost, as well as a curator. So her work was, she was actually an artist organizing themselves. So well before the so-called YBAs, the young British artists, Damien Hirst, Tracy Emin, were doing that kind of thing. These guys were before that, because that YBAs really started in the late 80s towards the 90s at Goldsmiths. But black British artists, including black women, were doing that kind of organization, self-organization, hiring warehouses, doing exhibitions well before the YBAs. And that's something which I think really needs to be out there in the public sphere, right? So that's the kind of context, that's the starting point for the display. But just really briefly, before I kind of open up discussion, the context, of course, if we go back to the beginning of the 1980s, was, you remember 1981, it's very similar to what's happening today. There were basically urban uprisings, otherwise termed as riots, in cities in Britain, in Bristol, in Liverpool, in Toxteth, in Liverpool, in Birmingham, and Handsworth, which was basically rocking British cities, right? This was the time of Mrs. Thatcher. We remember Thatcher on the go with the racist show, right? You remember that? So this was a time when politics and art were polarized, when it was a quite a dark period, and we seemed to be entering a similar kind of period. Now, that was the essential context in this. And then there were, so in a way, these exhibitions came out of a response by young black artists, black men and black women, to the political situation at that time. And I think that's a very important sort of starting point. And then a number of initiatives that came out of these organizations by these young black artists, people like Eddie Chambers, okay, artist and curator, Donald Rodney, okay, Keith Piper, Claudette, Marlene Smith, basically came together and organized a series of exhibitions under the title of the Pan-African Connection, which are very important. So in 1981, for example, you had an exhibition called Black Art and Done, which was one of the first exhibitions involving black artists in Britain. And then in 82, there was a big convention at Wolverhampton Polytechnic, now university, called the First National Black Art Convention. So at this time, a kind of coalition of young black artists interested in responding to the questions of the time started to come together to organize exhibitions and symposiums, which coalesced in this very important conference in 1982, at Wolverhampton. Now, I wanted to kind of come in because Claudette and Lubaina were both at that exhibition, so I really...
That conference.
Really, I wanted to kind of ask you a bit about what it was like and what do you think were the aims of that? Because, you know, that people are now starting to talk about that exhibition, you know, 30 years later, that conference. But it was really quite an important moment for black artists, wasn't it? I mean, Claudette, you were an artist at that time. What was your kind of link with that whole sort of scene? And what were you?
I'd met Eddie Chambers, who was one of the organizers of the convention, in Wolverhampton, when he was showing in the exhibition called Black Art and Done. He and Keith Piper were showing that in that exhibition. Whilst the exhibition was on, Eddie came to Wolverhampton Polytechnic, where I was a student. I was a second-year student. And we had a chat, and he invited me to join the group. And whilst I was in the group, we talked about and then organized a convention of black artists. The idea was to kind of find out where black art students were, what they were doing, whether, you know, there were echoes of what we were doing in what they were doing, whether there was something that could be called black art, to debate all of those issues, really, just to open it up. And I suppose because it's been such a powerful experience joining that group for me and having people talk to about my work where, you know, because in the college setting and the polytechnic where I was doing my degree course, there were some aspects of the work that would not be discussed, that were not considered relevant to a discussion about art. So joining that group gave me a forum for talking about that work, and I found sounding echoes in what they were doing. So we thought that the conference might open up even further. Obviously, the conference was contentious in lots of ways, and lots of disagreement, as you'd expect. Mm. But yeah, it was an incredibly exciting experience.
Lubaina, you were an artist at that time, young artist.
Well, I wasn't so young, actually. Even then, I wasn't young.
What were your recollections?
Well, by that time, I was at the Royal College of Art. And I trained earlier as a theatre designer. I'd gone into theatre design and theatre spat me out. And so by that time I was at the Royal College writing a thesis on young black artists in Britain today, it was called. A boring time, but anyway, that's what it was. And I heard about this conference and I thought, well, if that's what I'm writing about, I need to kind of meet some of the people that I had heard about, and maybe I could meet some more people. So so I was one of those London people then that never went anywhere else in Britain. Now I'm a true British person and I go everywhere and I live in the north of England. But then I made this big trip to Wolverhampton, and it was an incredibly exciting conference. My recollection of it was that it was enormous. I mean, the the hall, the lecture theatre that we're in, was enormous. I mean, there were hundreds of people there.
Yeah.
It was really, really astonishing. And it was very contentious. So it seemed to be arguments were going on the stage. It's not like this evening when we're all nodding sagely what each other has said. It was, there was kind of, well, the best thing about it, I suppose, was that there was freedom to disagree. So that was exciting. Yeah,
what was interesting about it as well was that, I mean, okay, so you had, it's important to understand that before the kind of generation of black artists who were, some of whom were born in Britain, who the first generation of black artists to go to art schools in Britain, there were many artists such as Frank Bowling, Audrey Williams, Rashid Areen, who were born in, you know, in Caribbean and African countries, who came as migrant artists to Britain to study, and who were actually exhibiting it at that time, and who were very interested in ideas around modernism.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in a political sense, but who were, some of those guys were also present at the conference, weren't they?
Yeah.
So it'd be, and I know that there were kind of debates about, you know, interventions from people like Aubrey and Frank,
yeah,
and there were certain discussions around that. But I guess one of the things that's quite interesting is that there was a debate around black art and what black art should be. And what were your kind of responses to that? In the sense of did that mean anything to you, black art? Did you think that you were actually doing black art, or were you just doing, you know, art?
I think by that time, I think I was doing black art.
Yeah.
Because I had been doing theatre design, and then I was doing what I think I thought was political art, feminist art, I suppose you might call it, but I couldn't really get a conversation going with the feminists that were working at the time on shows like, it was a great big ICA show, there must be somebody here who can remember its name. Images of Men, thank you very much. So I was trying to sort of have conversations with those curators and those people. I couldn't quite do that. And so, yeah, I think I was making black art. I was trying to say something that I couldn't see being said anywhere else. I don't know.
Claudette, what was your kind of relationship to black art at that time?
I considered I was making black art. I think all of us in that group felt that if the work spoke about concerns that, primarily concerned black people, then it was to some extent black art. And for me, kind of into my second year at Wolverhampton, I had decided that black women were going to be my subject, that they were going to be central in the work, and that was a political statement in itself to do that.
Because there was a lack of
imagery. Because there was a complete absence of imagery.
Yeah.
And also I had no idea about a prehistory of black artists working in Britain.
Right.
So
the kind of education you had at art school, did that deal with black art at all?
No.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that struck me from talking to people about that conference was, and I think Claudette, you're quite, your name comes up as we talked about as being quite central to this, is that there was a sense in which it was a very politicized time. People were kind of angry. When I say angry, I mean people were kind of concerned about politics. I mean, just take, for example, Donald Rodney, an artist, a very important artist at that time, who worked with Keith Piper, who, you know, around that time became politicized. He was when he went to art school, initially he started painting flowers, and he wanted to be like Picasso. That was his role model, to be like, to paint like Picasso. And he met Keith Piper, who was a slightly older black artist, who said to him, well, you know, there's riots in the streets, you know, you can't paint flowers, you know? What are you doing? You know, we need to respond to this as black artists. So there was a sense in which it was about trying to engage the what's happening with the community in the artwork. But what I find interesting is that in terms of black women, because there was a kind of sense in which some of the black women at that time, yourselves, kind of went into a separate room to say, well, actually, I mean, maybe you can explain that. It was a kind of sense in which there were aesthetic disagreements about how to approach these questions. A lot of the men were very much around, you know, a very didactic, political form of, you know, militant black art in the actual artwork itself. And perhaps people like yourselves were quite interested in expressing that in a very different way. Maybe you could say a little bit about that. Or am I putting you on the spot?
You are putting me on the spot.
Well, it is kind of quite hazy, but I do think it's important that there was this enormous lecture theatre, and there was a lot of disagreement and conflict happening. And in a sense, I kind of felt at the time that we weren't kind of getting to what we had come here to discuss, which was art and what kind of art we were making, and actually talking about the stuff itself, I suppose, and comparing it or I don't know, sharing it somehow. But I'm a very cautious sort of person, so I sat there still and I listened to what was happening. But it seems to me that at some point or another, Claudette stood up. You seem to stand
up. I love this image. I'd love to be that person, but go on, come on.
And said that she thought that the conversations weren't really getting anywhere, and that there was a room that was off the main lecture theatre, which I guess was about as big as this room, seems to have lots of windows in it, and she was inviting the women artists to come to that room, and maybe we could talk about art. And so we went.
Mm. Okay. Well, I would definitely have gone with that. However, very recently, about 2 nights ago, I listened to the transcript, well, to the tapes from that from the convention, which still exist and are being transcribed. And what happened was that the conference had been mainly papers delivered, talking about the theory, the theory of black art, what it should be, what it shouldn't be, who was making it, who wasn't making it. And then I'd been asked to speak about my work, and I was the last speaker of the afternoon. And obviously things had not run to time. And you can hear how I speak. I speak slowly, and I pause a lot, and I sigh, and I do all the things. So it meant that by the time I'd started going through my slides, and having lots of blank slides that I hadn't arranged properly, basically we ran out of time to discuss the work. We got to the end of my talk. People had started, do you remember this? People had started commenting. There were some strong questions coming up about whether my work could be identified as the work of a black artist, of a black person. That was the first comment, I seem to remember. And that started to split the conference. So we'd planned that there would be workshop sessions on a number of different topics. But because this discussion has only just begun, someone in the audience, I think it was actually Merv Ross,
stood up
and said, well, I think this discussion should continue, and it seems to be that mostly the women who want to hear this discussion. And then I think Eddie said, well, you know, there's going to be workshops and they can continue there. And then after further discussion, we decided that there would be a vote on whether people wanted to go and continue discussing this work and this issue in a separate space as a workshop, or mm-hmm. continue a whole group discussion, a whole conference discussion in that lecture theatre. And because I voted that we should have that discussion that had begun in the theatre, I was supposed seen to take the discussion out and effectively divide the conference, because then the conference continued in that space with mm-hmm. whoever remained in that room, mm-hmm. and we, those of us who came out, had
black
a separate,
women, mostly black women,
mostly black women,
black
in
and
fact,
Asian.
Entirely.
And Asian women, we should say.
Yes, black,
yes,
and,
black
Asian
and Asian women.
Women. Yeah.
It's important just to say that black at that time meant black and Asian, South Asian.
Yeah, that's,
it wasn't just a,
that's, that is important.
It was a political kind of sense of black.
Yes.
Yeah, which was Rashid's first paper as well.
Exactly.
Anyway, so so we went into different spaces, and I, looking back, I realised that there were lots of drawbacks to that, in that it wasn't documented, the discussion that we had. We didn't have microphones. It hadn't been planned, so. A lot was lost that was discussed in that workshop that wasn't lost that took part in the took place in the rest of the convention, because that's been recorded. So,
but the significance of that, in a way, with hindsight, is that it led to black women kind of starting to see an independent role for or a space, creating a space for black women's concerns within art in Britain at that time, which kind of, Lubaina, you took up in your kind of artwork and in curatorial work.
Yes, I think because in that room, but now of course my memory has now proved to be somewhat unreliable.
I have to say, I like your version.
It's
more heroic.
Yes. I think that what happened was that we did get to talk about the work, and for I do not know how many decades since, that's what I'm interested in talking about. So I think the politics comes out of talking about the work. Mm. It doesn't make the discussion any less political, but that was the way that a particular set of people were trying to change the world, through being artists. You know, we chose not to be councillors or MPs or whatever else. We were artists, and it was the making of that stuff and the how we made it and how we showed it and our relationship to audiences that we wanted to talk about. And I think, for me, that was the beginning of understanding that what was political was the way we related to audiences. I would say probably if we invented anything in that room, it was the notion that an audience is important, that you're making work and audiences engage with it, and that's important. We weren't just making it to make a beautiful thing. We were making it to have a conversation.
Mm.
So let's talk about the work, as you mentioned the work, because obviously that's central. And it seems to me, looking at the display, the first thing that hits you quite obviously is that you see images of black women. You see depictions in various forms, various media, of black women at the centre of the frame. And that seemed to me to be quite essential, because perhaps I don't think black women had been pictured that way in British art before that moment. So that's quite significant, you know. So Claudette, I mean, in terms of your work's in the display upstairs is a kind of trilogy of women in blue, black, and red, in watercolour, gouache, and pastel on paper, your drawings, in fact. So tell us a little bit about what you were trying to do there. Who were these women? What were you trying to do? And why were you working in, for example, pastel and drawing at that time? Because also Sonia Boyce's work, was very much influenced by pastel and drawing as well. So what was the kind of attraction to drawing as a medium for, if any, for black women artists at that time?
Well, it was cheaper. It was cheaper than working. You know, if I'd made those works in oils, it would have been extremely expensive on that scale.
Yeah.
So it's one thing. And also, I could work much larger relatively quickly. I mean, it still took weeks, but much more quickly, again, than I could solely working in paint. It's a very flexible medium. It's the medium you can almost sculpt with them, pastels. Mm. And so for me, the texture of the paper and being able to push and mould on the surface was very important. I mean, I'd done a little bit of sculpture a year or so before, and I started to get a sense of, you know, working with three-dimensional space. And so somehow I felt pastel has that quality to it too, that you can build this three-dimensional
and there's a real warmth to it as well, isn't
sensation
it?
In a few marks, you know, the minute you start to put black pastel on white paper, something three-dimensional seems to occur, in my view anyway. So it was a satisfying medium in terms of the speed, the power of the image that you could create, mm-hmm. and the cost.
I just want to quickly read a quote from you at the time of the Thin Black Line exhibition, where you talked about your work. I think it's really interesting. If I can just find it really quickly. You say, "The black women in my drawings are monoliths, larger than life versions of women, invisible to white eyes and naked to our own. They are women who have been close to me all my life with different stories. They're not objects. Every black woman who survives art college, fairy tales, and a repressive society to make images of her reality deserves the name artist."
It's all said there. I don't know what else to say.
So who were these women that you depicted?
They were friends. I mean, usually I had... I usually draw people that I know.
And who were your kind of influence? What were you kind of thinking about? What were your influence at the time? Were you thinking about the way, you know, portraiture, for example? Or what were you kind of... What were your influences at the time? Were you... where was your head at the time?
Where's my head? I'd made quite a lot of work that wasn't so much, didn't look so much like portraiture, but looked slightly more abstract, or the forms were more abstract, if you like to say that. But those three works, starting with the central image, Woman in Black, I'd wanted to start thinking about space, something about how we use space. And I'd asked her to find a position where she could take up the maximum amount of space. I'd been thinking about how on the bus I would not take up too much space. I wouldn't sit with my legs splayed and my arms out, you know. I'd contain myself. And I thought, well, let's look at, can I explore that a little bit? So that was one impetus for the work. And... I suppose the other major factor is obviously what's said in that statement, which is about invisibility, and it comes up over and over again when any black artist, I think, talks about their work, that it was just important to give presence to black women, to give them space, to give them a presence, and to find out three different times with three different colour formations and see what comes out. Mm. So.
Lebena, the work that you have upstairs, the two kind of cut-out figures that are leaning on the wall, called the Carrot Piece. I mean, as you said, your background's in theatre design, which obviously kind of, you know, you can see that influence. What was the kind of motivation behind that piece and the kind of work you were making at the time?
Well, earlier than that, in the show Five Black Women at the Africa Centre, I'd made five cut-out men, white men, with... 4-foot penises, and their penises were either paintbrushes or a family or skyscrapers or a dog. So in this show, in the Africa Centre, that's what I showed. And there's a certain amount of kind of conflict about that, but most of the time people did think they were very funny. I have to say that actually I don't think there's anywhere now that I could show those pieces. Because in the years that have gone by, you couldn't show work like that now, I would say. But anyway, what happened was that, I was a theatre designer. I wasn't a particularly good theatre designer, but I knew how to make things. And I loved to make things with an electric jigsaw. I loved to cut out plywood with an electric jigsaw, use paint that was around, and make something that was kind of in a room that would sort of change a room, like a bit of furniture. I didn't really think about, although I knew a lot about art, I didn't really think about myself as an artist in that way. I wasn't making things to last. I wasn't making things for museums or for history. I was just making something to be in a room. So that, I don't know, I'd actually call it moved on, but I decided to be a bit more subtle about what I was trying to say about the amount of space and energy and time that white men took up. And so the Carrot Piece is really about the thin black line, in a sense. It's about being an artist and being tempted by something that seems to offer you everything, but knowing that it's not offering you the things that matter, the spiritual things, the nurturing things. So the man is on his trick cycle, and he has his stick and a carrot, and he's offering you, you know, the glittering thing of being in the ICA. And we are saying, yeah, well, we'll go there, but we are our own women. And so I made it for that space, really.
Sure.
But as a kind of mirror to those cut-out men that had gone before.
Let's quick, before I move on to the next thing I want to talk about, which is around the legacy, I wanted to talk a bit about that show at the ICA. So this, there was a show at the ICA in 1985 called The Thin Black Line, which were 11 women, black women artists. And this is the first time that a major mainstream art institution in Britain had hosted an exhibition by black women, black and Asian women. And one of the striking things about that show, now if anyone has been to the ICA, now there's a kind of corridor that kind of goes from, when you go through the main entrance of the bookshop, there's a kind of long corridor that goes through into sort of galleries. And one of the striking things about the show, Lubaina, is that the exhibition took place in the corridor, right? Which hence the title Thin Black Line. Now I know people like Eddie Chambers kind of critiqued you for saying, well, you know, why do a show in the corridor, not in the galleries, right? Mm. But you've said, and I'll let you explain, that there was a strategy behind that.
Also, it was called the Concourse Gallery, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
It was actually called, that space was called Concourse Gallery.
It was a space, and it had a role. It was a space for emerging artists, in a sense. So,
but most of the artists were very young. I mean, you were
they
kind of,
were.
Yeah,
they were.
Just
they,
out of art school.
Most of the artists were about 22, something like that. And by that time, I was about 32, something like that. So it was a designated space. You did go to see exhibitions in that space. But the main space, I mean, the corridor was, in fact, the Concourse Gallery was actually thinner than it is now. And the main space was actually bigger. And I suppose it came about again because there were all sorts of funding arguments going on at the time between what was the Greater London, the GLC, and the ICA, where the GLC funded what went on at the ICA and quite clearly said, you know, you're not showing the sort of work made by many of the people paying taxes in this city. You're going to have to do something about it. Do something about it. But I suppose it was a kind of act of desperation on their part. And I came across a letter, actually, that I wrote to Declan McGonagall, which, because it's in the archive here, and so the people in the Hyman Crichton archive here showed me a letter that I wrote. And because I looked at this letter, it's a bit like, this is my story of what happened. And in this letter to Declan, I say, I want the whole of the ICA. I want the big gallery, and I'll put Veronica Ryan in the whole of the big gallery. And then in the Nash rooms, I want to put myself, modest as ever, myself and Sonia Boyce and Claudette Johnson and Sokari Douglas-Camp. Well, I mean, I don't remember writing this. Well, I remember that I want the whole space bit, but not the details. And then I'd like to put in the Concourse Gallery photographs, prints, textiles, which was a kind of some of the things that were in Black Woman Time Now at the Battersea Arts Centre. So there was a kind of whole conversation sort of exhibition in the concourse, this one-person show in the main gallery, and then four people in the Nash rooms. And the letter to him, he obviously received the letter, and he underlines what some of the things I've said. And next to the main gallery idea, he puts a line, and then he puts the number 3. And underneath the Nash rooms, he puts a line and the number 2. And underneath Concourse Gallery, he puts a line and number one. And so we ended up all of that in the Concourse Gallery. So that's sort of how it happened. But he obviously then said to me, we can give you the Concourse Gallery. And I'm not a woman to say, I mean, I'm a woman to say no in the privacy of my own home. But I'd written in this letter, you know, I don't know what I've written. I have this letter, yeah. But so I'm a woman to say yes, and then let's see what we can do with it. And it was pretty hurtful, I think, to find that that was kind of disapproved of by Eddie. I said, I can provide visuals if you don't know any of the work. I can draw and describe what I would hope to see happen in the concourse, although this would depend upon which artist took part. I haven't provided you with any of this here because I'm not at all sure how serious the ICA is about moving over a bit at the water trough. You know, so I'm kind of being incredibly sort of bold and rude. And I kind of don't remember any of that, but conveniently. But it was all about taking then what was on offer
right. And
making something of it.
Right.
And I think that's how we continued, really.
Sure.
We knew what we wanted.
I want to, we've got a few minutes left, we've got about 10 minutes left before we have to leave the room, but before we open it up to the audience, just quickly, in terms of the legacy or the legacies of this show, then Lebena has a fantastic kind of map of that period. Just quickly, what would you say, I mean, for example, one legacy is the fact that, you know, the what's happened to those artists in that show, 30 years ago, it's very varied. Some, like Lebena and Sonia Boyce, are MBEs and are showing in galleries. Others who are off the radar completely, we don't know what, you know, others are, you know, so it's a very varied in terms of individual artists. But what would you say are the main legacies, or what would you like to see as legacies of that work? Because in a way, the circumstances in which they are produced, you know, riots, deflation, unemployment, are back. But it's interesting to see. I'm not sure what kind of response. There isn't a black art that is now coming to respond to that.
But what there is a greater understanding that art can actually have conversations with people, and that people can think differently when they come to see art, and a set of artists that now understand that. I think we did, I think for me, it's a respect for audience.
Mm-hmm.
And a genuine conversation with audience that I think is much more possible and more normal now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that came out of that work that we did.
Activity, yeah.
That all those people, Eddie, Donald, yeah. All of them,
yeah.
That's what we were trying to do.
Sure.
We weren't just making it to pop it in a gallery and make it look lovely
mm-hmm.
and sell it.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing it to speak.
Yeah. Claudette? Very briefly.
Hopefully that art students, you know, can see the work and can see that there's a history that they're part of, whether they're black or white. And I suppose hopefully that they don't feel isolated in the way that perhaps that I know I did when I was studying.
Absolutely.
So get a sense of. Yeah, there was huge support, both from showing the work, showing together, and knowing these other artists and being able to have these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully some of that comes through the work, even though I hope.
Sure. Okay, I mean, just to kind of as a rejoinder to that, just to let you, just information, there is this show on at Tate Britain. At the moment in the Graves Gallery in Sheffield, there's a show called The Black Art Group, of which some work by these artists are in that. There is the Migration show that opens at Tate Britain that I'm involved in, which will involve some of the artists here as well. And there are a number of, in a way, there's a kind of moment of revisiting that moment of black art. But let me now quickly, we've got about 8 or 9 minutes left, open it up to the audience. We've got some questions here. So there's one here and then one there, please. Sorry, could you wait for the microphone because it's being recorded?
Thank you. I just wanted to talk a bit about other art that was going on at the time, particularly the Black Art Gallery. And I think it was one of the first exhibitions of black women photographers called Isis. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's really important that this part of history is really documented very well, so that it's not just picking up those artists that were part of institutions, and that there's a lot of artists who are self-taught, who had to argue, scrabble, and all sorts of stuff. And yet, as women did separate off to get some things done, and also the Brixton Art Gallery and the Black Art Group that was set up there, serious pieces of history went on. How they're being documented, I don't know. But there seems to be a, the documentation I've seen so far, but I haven't seen all of it, seems to just pick up those who went into institutions and those who really fought hard, argued hard, did sit-ins and all sorts. That's not being documented. And then I say to myself, we have to document it, and it means going back and finding people. But there are other stories that need to be told too. That's
okay.
All.
Okay, great. Can we have the other question? Maybe you can maybe answer.
I'm Françoise Dupré. I'm one of the project manager and co-curator of Brixton Calling, which is an archiving project and a community project about the Brixton Art Gallery, which is mentioned in Lubina Yemid maps. As we've, as you mentioned, the Brixton Art Gallery had a black women's group called Black Women in View, and the first exhibition was Mirror Reflecting Darkly in 1985. Mm-hmm. And I think I agree with you. It's really, really important to get the story out of the 1980s. I'm not sure how... Well, first of all, I wanted to say something about the ICA Thin Black Line. Lubina, you are very modest. This was an amazing show. Any women artists went to see that show. It was a huge... It was a very important show, and the ICA already by then was a highly, you know, was a very important space for contemporary artists. So, you know, this was a very inspiring show. We knew that afterwards the ICA would say, okay, we've ticked all the boxes, and after that, well, women artists, black women artists, we didn't have many after that. But that's really, really an important show. Paul, your introduction to the 1980s, I'm not sure how useful it is to put, and I think that goes back to your comment, I don't know how useful it is for black art to be perceived as some kind of isolated movement somehow in the limbo out there. The 80s in Britain was an extraordinarily radical time. There were feminist artists, there were lesbian and gay artists, there were black artists, and we all met. And there was a huge amount of interaction going on. And one space that did that was the Brixton Art Gallery. So do please come to the 198. We've got a catalogue. Right. Our archive is going to Tate. Sure. Many of the artists that in Thin Black Line showed with the Brixton Art Gallery. But it's really, really important to get the full picture.
Okay, great. Do you want to respond quickly before we get some more questions?
No, I think that's it. I think it's absolutely necessary that these stories are told. I guess what happens is if you, in a way, the map was what I tried to do, but it's such an enormous story. It's you can only more or less, and you can see how kind of haltingly anyway, we can tell the story we were actually in. But I think one of the main things is our connectivity, because not only were there galleries, there were theatre companies, the Theatre of Black Women, there were all kinds of different organisations, publications, publishing houses, Akira Press, poets, all sorts of stuff happening.
Filmmakers.
Filmmakers, yes. Filmmakers, sorry. Of course. You know, So, you know, at least two or three black filmmakers groups.
Yeah. I mean, just quickly response to both questions. I mean, you're absolutely right about the fact that, you know, there needs to be more research about the depth of participation and the range of people that were involved at that time. What I would say, Thin Black Line, this display, is, you know, in a way, one particular moment. It's a starting point to open up a conversation.
Yeah.
It's a conversation that Tate has not been involved in.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Most of the works that you see there are not in the Tate collection. Only one work in that display is in the Tate collection. Why? Because Tate wasn't collecting. National museums were not collecting those works at that time. It's mostly local museums.
Regional
museums.
We
that
in
were
the
doing
regions
it.
Call them regions.
So this is a kind of sense. to answer the question over there about isolating black art, absolutely not. This display, okay, let me be clear about that, curatorially, is not a display of black art. It's a display about British art. Okay, it's part of the British art displays, the BP British art displays. So this is about documenting a moment in British art where British artists were coming to voice to articulate a range of concerns that were not part of the mainstream until that point. That's the important point. It's not an isolated point about black art being over there at the centre. It's actually about the way in which it's part of British art history. And that is what I feel that Lebena and I have achieved with this particular display. Are there any other questions? We just take a couple quickly. We've got time, Mary.
You were talking about dissension happening at this conference that seemed so important in Wolverhampton. Was it just within the context of the conference, or was this a wider dissension going on?
Okay.
I think it was just disagreements within the conference
about
what black art was, how we could be more visible, what kinds of shows we ought to be making, or whether we should be writing about it, whether, you know, it was that, it was about making ourselves more visible. But I think, yeah, so there were, and whether I suppose the way that the younger artists seemed to want to do it was going to work, you know, the older artists were more interested in their making of art, and I think some of them thought that this was a distraction, and that the strategy was wrong and wouldn't work.
Eddie had a piece in that Wolverhampton exhibition called Black Art and Done, which I saw, which was called Who No Black Now, Now Go Black Again, which means if you're not, you know, if you can't identify how important it is to recognise your race and its implications at this point in time, then you never will. And I think the contention, I think, spread beyond that particular convention. I mean, we had follow-up conventions, follow-up conferences where the same debates raged again. And it's an impossible one to resolve, but it's an important one to continue to have, because whenever you make work and you're an artist of colour, some of those issues are going to return.
We've got time for one more question, I think, over there. Thank you.
I just wanted to pick up on Lebena's raising about audiences, and I think it's incredibly important that the display is upstairs and a great tribute to the efforts to get it that far. And it's great that the migration show is happening. I suppose I have a question, which is, while it's good for historic history to be rectified and we need more archives, and hopefully also these shows and these kind of discussions will attract more archives and documents to come to the surface, I do worry that displays like this can also lead to a ghettoization of another moment of history as well, in the sense that it would be nice to think that one would see some of those works integrated into the general displays as loan works and seen next to other British art produced at the same time, which would lift it out of the representational politics and the potential tick-boxing effect that a display like this can produce. And actually would also help a new art generation to look at this work and see what it means today, and to audiences and to have a kind of contemporary significance. And I might go even further than that and say, in the same way that Rachel Whiteread or Gilbert and George or other British artists can show at Tate Modern, what would it mean to see these artists and these works amongst an international display of work? Because I think we would then get to an even better and different reading. Not a better reading, but a different reading. I'd like to see Donald Rodney's work there. You know, if Steve McQueen can be at Tate Modern, then maybe Donald Rodney could be too. And maybe we get to a longer history. Comment more than a question.
Yeah. As you want to.
Yeah, it'd be a miracle.
But it is happening.
No, not really.
Yeah, yes. I'm just thinking, you still are living, practicing artists, and it would have been so great to see the work you're doing now.
But it, yes, it would have been, but
an
that isn't. But
not a display.
Yes, of course.
I mean,
one day.
Let's just quickly. I mean, Tate displays are often 30 years behind what's happening, right? So it's taken 30 years for a display about Black women's art to come into the displays at Tate Britain. I see this as an opening. There's been lots of response at the moment. You know, I've got lots of emails about, oh, we need to know about more about this artist and more about this artist. You know, unfortunately, this is how museums work. You know, museums are not at the forefront of contemporary art. The museums follow, basically. And so, you know, hopefully the what will come out of this display and the various activities that are happening is what Victoria is saying, which is that it will gradually be, you know, the intention is to integrate it into the mainstream of British art, rather than always at the edges. And the fact that it is part of the BP British art displays, I think, is one kind of indication about that. But hopefully this is not a one-off thing. You know, hopefully Tate will be doing more kind of, you know, exhibitions like this, and not just, you know, let's do this, we've done that now, we've ticked that box, let's move on. That's the goal, I think. So, Maria.
Actually, I think it would be really a miracle to see more. But to be honest, as I don't know how one would define black artists or black female artists, I certainly consider myself one of those. But, you know, within that kind of position, I still think there's a lot of need for making those kind of very precisely about black artists, black female artists, because I don't think there's enough work out there. Even for me as a researcher, I just can't find enough stuff. So I think it's very well for me or for artists such as myself who would want to kind of make work that is within all the other British artists. But in the end, if I'm not going to get treated as such, then I'm going to have to talk about my own art from my own position. And it's just not there.
Okay, well, I think we can fully round up there, Madeline.
Yeah, well, time has flown by, but I hope if you do want to carry on the conversation, we might be able to do that upstairs, either in the Octagon over a drink or in the display. And as Paul said, with the Migrations exhibition opening next year, which is on for 6 months, there will be an events programme, which I hope that we might be able to come together and continue discussions. So thank you all for coming. Thank you very much indeed to Labaina, to Claudette and to Paul.